back, WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are positively catching up with one of our guests on Moeller that we had booked and then we didn't have booked, and the coronavirus happened and I had a cancellation, and but we finally got him. But we are live via satellite today with our attorney general here in the state of Maryland. Don, and I know you go back a ways with Brian Frost, so I want to give you the honors after, of course, we talk about the crab cakes you were eating at Fadley's and the shrimp and grits that I'm not getting at State Farm. And, of course, at least Moeller and Gary still closing some deals over there in the Ville, right?
Absolutely, and we are honored, and we will be chatting with one of Maryland's truly most respected leaders in elective office in the state of Maryland for decades now, when we talked with Attorney General Brian Frost. But we do want to start, as always, by thanking our sponsors. We thank our friends at Fadley's downtown. I know the Attorney General probably has had a Fadley's crab cake along the way.
Guilty.
And they will yep. deliver them right to your house. You can pull up curbside. They'll bring them there. Nestor's happy. They'll even bring the mac and cheese out to the car for you. Our friends up the street here in Catonsville at State Fair, breakfast, lunch, dinner. They're doing a great new thing that is they're recognizing that food supply and folks are afraid to go to the grocery store. So they'll pack up a whole box of produce and protein, bring it right to your car. You'll be good to go for several weeks. So you don't even have to run into the grocery store. So call our friends at State Fair. They'll take care of you. And as Nestor said, we're very appreciative of our newest sponsor, Moeller & Gary Realtors, Jeff Moeller, 410-746-1547. Somehow they're buying and listing and settling homes during this pandemic, so business goes on. And as always, we thank all of our friends at KO Public Affairs in Center Maryland who help us in many, many ways with Baltimore Positive. So with that, it is our pleasure. We welcome a man who I know is very busy even during a pandemic, Maryland's Attorney General Brian Frost. Brian, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Don and Nestor, it's great to be with you guys.
We were trying to do like a Baltimore Positive before the normal election in a normal spring. We were going to ask you about the Orioles and the Nationals, you know, and then this happened. And obviously, we have to begin with sort of where we are in the middle of this, the sequestered part of all of this. And we always like to get to know our guest a little bit in three segments. We're going to do one lengthier segment with you. But where are you and where are you sequestered? And, you know, we see Larry Hogan standing up in front of the state every day, sometimes with a mask 6 feet apart. Now all outside, and same thing with Jack Young. Obviously, Trump's moved inside, outside, but and Barr's been next to him in D.C. Where are you on a daily basis over the first 2 months of this thing?
So for the past 4 weeks, 3 weeks, I've been at home, as has almost every single person in the Attorney General's office. We have folks who are, excuse me, going into the office to open the mail, and occasionally, we're having folks who have to go in to print briefs and stuff like that, but most of our work we're getting done remotely. It's really been extraordinary.
Well, Brian, one of the things that I think is helpful and that I was excited about in having you on when we tried to set this up several months ago before the world was turned upside down as we know it, is maybe you could take a couple of minutes and educate our listeners, and what we found out, what Nestor and I have really found out during this pandemic, is that the scope, it's exciting for us, the scope of Baltimore Positive really expanding, and that people really have a thirst for this knowledge and a thirst for learning how government works. I think that's really come to the forefront here. Describe for us and for our listeners what the Attorney General does and what the Attorney General's office does, because I think people would be surprised at the scope of the things that you guys are involved in.
Yeah, I found that to be true across the board, Don. So we have an office of about 850 people, 450 to 500 lawyers, depending on what day of the week you're talking about. And we represent the governor. We represent the General Assembly. We represent the treasurer, the comptroller. We represent every executive agency. And we give them advice. We defend them in court. We bring cases on their behalf. The part of the job that I relish the most, I call myself the people's lawyer. And I believe that's really the case. I view it to be our job to protect Marylanders, to improve their lives, and to deliver justice. And we sue some of the worst offenders, some of the worst lawbreakers in the state. I mean, first of all, we prosecute violent gang members, drug traffickers, human traffickers. We protect the citizens of Maryland from being ripped off. And in that connection, you know, we've sued some of the major banks, nursing homes, people who are trying to scam them and rip them off. And we try to affect public policy by advocating positions in the General Assembly and with the judiciary. And one example just this past month was our priority bill for last legislative session was to eliminate the policy of taking away people's driver's licenses because they failed to pay a fine. People might get a ticket, $50, $150, can't afford it. And as a result, the state will automatically suspend their driver's license. And this just exacerbates the problem. It means that people are out of work, or they have to break the law to get to work, or worst case scenario, they end up in jail because they drive, even though they don't have a license, they get stopped. And the next stop really is the jail. That's just a recent example of public policy initiative. We've spent a great deal of the past couple of years also defending our state, our environment, our people from some illegal policies that have been put into effect in Washington, D.C. The current administration has torn down protections for our environment, taken away benefits for people like SNAP benefits, people who are hungry, can't afford to buy food, and the administration has said, okay, you're cut off. We're not going to feed you. We're not going to help you feed your kids. Those are just a couple of areas. We fought to protect the Affordable Care Act. There are 300,000 or more people in our state who would not have health insurance but for the health exchange that we've created under the Affordable Care Act, and millions more, like probably you, Don, and me, who have pre-existing conditions, and without the Affordable Care Act, we'd never be able to get insurance at reasonable rates. So those are just a few of the things that we're engaged in.
Well, I can see Nestor's head. If we were zooming this, Nestor's head would be exploding.
Well, I would just start with this, that the general public doesn't understand what you do for the most part. You've been doing it for a long time, but your explanation, just your elevator speech in 5 minutes of like what you do in protecting people, there are about five things. I mean, from nursing homes where my 98-year-old mother died 2 years ago and I'm still scratching my head about why the state's, you know, all tied up. You know, they're crazy things, but the scams and the ripoffs, just to the point where my phone rings all day, right? From these scammers and lately it's the politicians, right? Like someone's calling me about Theroux today and Mary tomorrow and Jack on Friday, there's clearly a different thing going on with elections in my phone. But for you, when you watch what's happening every night at 6 o'clock, and I know it's I follow your work, and Don and I the reason Baltimore Positive was started, Attorney General, is because I was so disgusted with government as a citizen, as an FCC license owner, as a public figure, as someone that can't sell my place in Baltimore, with corruption in Baltimore, and now I see what's going on every night in the middle of the coronavirus, where literally citizens don't know who to trust, right? And this is where the law tries to protect them, but there are so many citizens that clearly we see now who don't really want a government and fight against you, because all of the things you said in the first 5 minutes, I'm thinking as a citizen, yeah, we need someone there. And I realize every day there's a hammer on the other side trying to fight you to take away our freedoms from people who maybe don't even understand it, from what I can gather.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, people are against government until they need it, until they realize that they need it. And the COVID-19 crisis really brings that to the forefront. I mean, people's jobs are gone. Their family members are sick or hungry. And without health insurance, without health care, without food, we won't get through this. And the government is the stopgap in all of those areas. And put aside those immediate things, government enforces the laws. I mean, it's government that protects us from criminals.
There are a lot of bad guys, right? Like, even the people just setting up these things that call my phone. Like, it really is amazing that if there's a loophole on the internet and, you know, asking my mom for money in Nigeria and, like, all of the chain letters, all of those things, I think to myself, no one's prosecuting this. How could they possibly prosecute this? There's too much of it going on.
That's absolutely right. And there are billions of robocalls every day. Look, there are people out there whose full-time job it is, Nestor, to steal your money. And they're at it all day. They're at it 5 to 7 days a week.
2 days ago, Attorney General, my wife opens our Easy Pass. At the end of March, we had passes from the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, the Lincoln Tunnel, New York, New Jersey, and you know what? We haven't left our house in 6 weeks, so $147 later. Luckily, a friend of mine's an attorney with the state, so we threw it. But there's apparently a blinking teach me about this, because this one hit my desk 48 hours ago, and I guess I've seen it on TV, on Rossin Reports or something, you know, but somebody clearly has gotten a hold of our Easy Pass, and they're using it every weekend in New Jersey this month, and we can't stop them.
Have you called the NVA to cancel and reboot?
I think we've got that handle. My wife's on that. But literally, this is the kind of scam that like came to us in the mail 2 days ago on Tuesday. And I thought to myself, my God, there's so many criminals. You know, I mean, thank goodness a guy like you's on the wall, right?
Yeah, I mean, if we are besieged, and the internet and cheap or to free phone service has really accelerated the pressure on all of us, because, as I said before, there are people who are trying to steal our money every minute of the day. And the best advice I can give you and everybody else is hang up, or don't pick up if you don't recognize the number. If you pick up and it's somebody asking you for something, promising you something, selling you, just hang up.
Brian, you talked about, I was feverishly scribbling notes as you were running through that standing summary of what the Attorney General does. One of the things I was struck by was right in the beginning, you said you had 450 or so attorneys.
Yes.
I don't have a list of every law firm in the state, but I'm assuming that if not the largest, that makes you the head of the largest law firms in the state of Maryland.
Yeah, I think we are. I mean, there are some national law firms that have offices in the state, but we're the biggest law office in the state.
Yeah, so you run the biggest law firm in the state, and then you went through all of the responsibilities. One of the things that you said that I think sometimes can be confusing for people is the idea that you represent the governor, you represent the General Assembly, you represent the controller, you represent the state of Maryland, the government that is. What do you do to sort it out, Mr. Attorney General, when those interests sometimes are in conflict? Let's say the General Assembly has one point of view on a policy issue and the governor has another. What does your office do then when you're put between that proverbial rock and a hard place?
There's a very clear answer to that, Don. It depends. You know, it really,
well, I like
it
that
really, yeah, it depends on the circumstances. First of all, our job is to defend the laws of the state of Maryland. And so if somebody is challenging a law that's been passed by the General Assembly, our job is to defend it. Now, when the law is unconstitutional, or it's clearly unconstitutional, conflicts with a federal law or something like that, we'll say, okay, you know, we can't defend that, but, you know, let's figure out another way around it. But when the governor and the General Assembly disagree, it really depends on the circumstances. If it's the General Assembly's passed the law and the governor doesn't like it and it's challenged, we defend it. If the governor takes an action that the General Assembly doesn't like or that we don't like, it gets challenged, we defend it. We're put in an odd situation a great deal of the time where I was in the General Assembly for a long time, and I have strong views about public policy, but we have to put those aside when there are conflicts between the governor and the General Assembly. Our job is to do what's right, defend the law, and even if I disagree with the policy, it's my job to fight for it in court.
It's one of the most interesting offices in all of government, and because it seems to me, Mr. Attorney General, that you are front and center on so many issues. And if we just go down the list, I look, the first thing you see on your website, protecting seniors, Nestor, things you care about, protecting seniors, consumer protection, the environment.
Well, I heard about gangs earlier, and I want to get to that too, but living in the city.
Well, I'm just going to ask the Attorney General about criminal justice, because I think we're called Baltimore Positive. We know the issues that the city has with violent crime. I'd be curious as to sort of your overview of where we are in terms of what we should be doing to make communities safe, and what you see as the future of criminal justice reform, and what the big issues are in that area.
Yeah, it's a great question, Don. And we address this in two different directions. I mean, we're fighting for justice overall. So we want, our first job is protecting Marylanders. And we have a small organized crime unit in our office. We do Medicaid fraud, we do economic crimes, we fight against organized crimes, and that's probably gotten the most attention. We go after multi-defendant, multi-jurisdictional violent crime. That's our highest priority. And we have broken up a series of different gangs affiliated with the Bloods, the Crips, the Black Gorilla Family, and others who are committing violence, selling drugs, and hurting people. We don't do the regular street crime and mugging. We don't ordinarily do carjackings, but one example of the work that we did is the police arrested four young men in connection with a carjacking, and they thought there was something more going on. They asked us to take a deeper dive into it. And ultimately, we investigated for quite a bit. Ultimately, we connected those four men with 26 different carjackings where they were they would get control of the car and still beat up the driver. They fractured one guy's skull. They shot at another as he fled on foot. They were quite a violent gang, and we managed to solve, I think, 26 different crimes and 26 different carjackings. We're deeply into that. In the course of investigating a violent drug gang, we solved the murder of Sebastian Dvorak, the young bartender in and Baltimore.
That's personal for me, Brian. You know, I live in South Baltimore, so when that young man was murdered, I realized he'd served me wings and beer at the bar on the corner.
Wow.
And I think I had 20 or 30 mutual friends just on Facebook who knew him well. And so that was one of those one that hits close to home, you know, literally.
Yeah. So, but let me, the other side of the coin is, we don't want people in jail who don't need to be there. And one of my first initiatives with respect to criminal justice was to change our bail system, because we had thousands of people in our jails every year, every day, for one reason and one reason only. They're poor. We had a cash bail system where judges were first, you know, setting bail that people had to pay in order to get out. They might set bail that they thought was reasonable, $1,000 or $2,500, which would mean you pay 10% of that to a bail bondsman to get out. But there are lots of people in our state who don't have $100 or $250 or $500. And it literally ruins their lives. If you can imagine just being locked up for a couple of days, you lose your job. Some folks lose their homes, their families, just because they can't afford to pay a few hundred dollars to get out of jail before a trial.
And by the way, even if you're not guilty, right? Like, literally.
You're not guilty.
I just spent the weekend in jail. I got accused of something. I didn't do it. Mm-hmm. I'm on the phone with my attorney. My wife's freaking out. It's mistaken. Whatever it is, right? You go back on Monday morning, you know, I'm not going to be a teacher on Don's staff anymore if that happens. You know, like, I would think that reputationally becomes a massive issue, because, you know, out of 100 arrests, not all of them lead to a conviction.
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, they don't get jail time even if they're convicted.
So, Brian, anyway, what is the status of that? It's so interesting. Again, so many flashbacks when you're mentioning this, because our dear friend Kevin Kamenetz, when he was running for governor, that was one of the things he was very passionate about. And again, he was an attorney, but he just saw the whole cash bail system as inequitable. One of Nestor's favorite words is this whole concept focused on equity, and he saw it as inequitable. And can you give us sort of the history of cash bail, and then tell us where we are in the state and the nation, really, in terms of where we are with cash bail today?
Well, Maryland is doing much better now. We asked the Court of Appeals, which makes the rules for proceedings and procedures in their courts, to change the rule so that cash bail was one of the lowest of the list of options that judges have. And they did so. And, of course, the bail bondsman had legislation where they tried to overturn that rule. But we now have a rule where that's the last thing you look at. The presumption is you're going to be released on your own recognizance unless you're a danger to the society or yourself, or you're likely to flee before your trial occurs.
Well, if you have a job, you're not going to flee, theoretically, correct? If you have a job, you're not going to flee, theoretically, right?
Right. I mean, most people aren't going to flee a minor offense anyway. I mean, there are studies all over the procedures, in effect, all over the country that show if you just text people to tell them when their trial date is the day before, they'll show up. It dramatically improves the appearance rates. And so that we're doing that now instead of just saying, okay, you didn't show up, you're going to jail. It's easier to get people to show up than practically free. So each county has different procedures, but the rule now is much less, or the cash bail is the least favored option. And either you detain someone who's dangerous or you let them go with conditions. Some people have to wear a GPS device so we can follow them around, because, you know, there's a concern that they'll be dangerous or would flee. But there are fewer people being held, and there are fewer people being held because they can't afford to pay bail.
Let's reset things here. Brian Frosch is with us. He is our Attorney General for the state of Maryland. Don Moeller, former Baltimore County Executive. We're doing some Baltimore positive around here, shouting out our sponsors, giving love to everybody who's holding this thing together during the virus. And we've been trying to have the Attorney General on for a period of time. And I canceled and he moved and the virus happened. So here we are together in the middle of all this. I have a couple of topics I want to hit to before I get to Trump. And I don't want to, you know, that is for all the lawsuits you filed. You're my dude. So I'm glad you're on the wall. Surveillance and air surveillance in the city. This is going to be an issue for all the mayor candidates. I think it's going to be an issue all summer long. I live in the city, and you're like, these people, they carjacked 26 people. And I'm thinking, well, if that's Linda Mueller with a gun to her head or my wife, or we drive through corners and we go to theaters in town and, you know, we do things on street corners, and it wouldn't just sound like a carjacking that I read about in black and white in the newspaper. It would sound like I would, you know, I don't want to say what I want to say, but I am, I've talked about the death penalty around here with Martin O'Malley in the past as well, about things like that when I go back to police shootings when I was a kid and the famous Vincent Adolfo and Flint Gregory Hunt. Vincent Adolfo was a childhood friend of mine and a cop, and so I followed that to the death penalty. But then I see things like surveillance in the city and air surveillance, and I don't think it should be done not to the letter of the law, and obviously some things were done in the past that may have shaded that, but in the future, if we want to fly a plane around that someone shoots someone, carjacks someone, mugs someone, whatever it would be, that you could find that criminal and prosecute that criminal, I want to be all for that, having lived here without it. And in the case of all the things that you've prosecuted, I don't know enough about it. I'm trying to learn everything I can learn about it. But as a citizen, and I am worried about Big Brother knowing everything I do and everything I type and every Facebook ad I get. But I am much more concerned about our safety. And 10 years from now, where will Baltimore be if we're the guinea pig in the whole world and really using this thing as a real tool to say, we had a crime problem here and we don't anymore? That's where I want to get.
Well, I wish I could tell you, Nestor, I got the solution. Here it is. It's surveillance flight. It's wiretapping. It's closed circuit TV. I don't know. I do know that we need to create trust between our law enforcement officers and units and the people who live in Baltimore. That would be a huge help. I mean, one of the things that we find that's really an impediment to good law enforcement is people don't want to come forward.
Yeah.
They don't. They see a crime. They know of a crime. They don't want to talk. And there are a number of reasons for that. One, they're scared. Some of the criminals in our state and in our city are so violent that they actively go out and try to kill witnesses, and they're more successful than they ought to be. And there are some folks who don't trust the police, and so somehow we've got to break that sort of chain of events, that milieu. We have to change the atmosphere. And, yeah, I mean, there are some surveillance opportunities and technologies that are available that weren't available when the framers wrote the Constitution.
Well, on my doorbell, literally, right? On everyone's doorbell.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, Brian, again, you talk. It's amazing when you talk. I'm sitting here in my office I look across in the chair, and I almost see our good buddy Kevin Kamenetz sitting there, because one of the things that he took so much criticism from some on this position was his absolute outspoken passion for rejecting Trump's immigration attacks. Was not only that morally, not only was he the grandson of someone who flew czarist oppression in Russia to get here, morally he objected, but he also objected, Brian, on a public safety basis, because he knew, and what we've always been told in Baltimore County from all of our police chiefs, was that the only way, and this is what the city, I think, has been up against because they've lost this, and you alluded to it, the only way you will effectively protect communities is if the people living in those communities trust law enforcement and cooperate. And
right.
If you're going to attack the immigrant community and drive them underground and make them terrified of police, you're not going to solve crimes in your community. It's anti-public safety.
Wow, I've never heard you on Baltimore Positive bringing Mueller out of his shell. All right. I thought you were the PR part of this. I mean, this is the hard news part of it. I love this.
Am I right on that, though, Brian?
Yeah. Can I tell you a story about one of our cases? It's a young woman working in a restaurant is raped by a coworker, and she calls the cops. They arrest the guy, and her husband then gets a phone call a few days later from the attorney for the defendant, and the lawyer says, "Hey, look, my guy is going to go into that courtroom, and ICE is going to be there. And at the end of the case, one way or another, they're going to take him away. But when they come for him, he's going to turn to your wife and say, 'What about her? Because she doesn't have papers either. And so we should settle this case among ourselves.' And he offered them money in order for her not to testify. What it demonstrates, I mean, also ultimately it worked out okay. But which is to say, we got a conviction of the lawyer for obstruction of justice. It may not have been technically obstruction of justice. I don't remember what the count was. But the point is that people are intimidated anyway. I mean, it's scary to go into court and say, that guy committed some brutal act on me or my neighbor or my family. They're scared of the people who do it. So it takes guts to step into court in the first place. But if you think you're going to get deported because you've been a victim of crime and you testify about it, why would you ever do it? And what that means is that the rest of us are less safe. It's just a terrible disincentive. You have people breaking the law, living undercover because they're afraid they're going to get deported. And for the most part, they're working, they're paying taxes, even though they get no Social Security, they're paying Social Security. We need them to be part of society, at least to the extent that they can help us solve crimes and identify criminals.
Well, Nestor, there's your segue. You've been waiting for this as we're coming up on the clock. I will tell you, Nestor, and this leads us into the Attorney General's efforts to resist what's happening in Washington. Brian, you probably remember, we've been together two or three times in different social settings, and I think the first two times, I would say to you, I keep saying it can't get any worse. It can't get any worse.
Yeah. Here we are.
Finally, the third time we were together, I remember looking at you and saying, "Oh, okay, Mr. Attorney General, I'm going to change the intro. It clearly can get worse every day.
It's made my hairstyle worse. So look at it.
It does." And you've been there from the beginning, whether it's the Emoluments Clause, or environmental. I mean,
well, the environmental stuff is where I want to go, because at the end of all of this,
talk about Brian is the president's ongoing attack, and you've been active again recently in taking on the EPA. Tell our listeners what is happening to environmental protections under this president, and why you feel compelled to fight back.
So, the Trump administration has sought out to dismantle literally every environmental protection that we have. The Clean Air Act, They've been trying to reduce the standards for pollution from automobiles, from industries, from power plants, from landfills, because methane comes out of landfills and it's supposed to be limited. Literally every source of pollution, they have tried to reduce the standards to allow more pollution.
My favorite's pesticide, by the way. That's my favorite.
Gary, pesticides, yeah, I mean, chlorpyrifos, which is a drug that is toxic. It's a neurotoxin, especially dangerous for infants, toddlers, pregnant women. They want to keep using it, and in violation of the rules that were promulgated during the Obama administration. The chemical, now I'm blanking on the name, it's a law and a rule that says if you're storing toxic chemicals, you got to tell the neighbors, you got to tell the first responders, police, fire, EMT, folks who are going in to put out a fire, clean up a spill. You got to tell them what they're facing. They've eliminated that as well. We fought them in court on all of these and been very successful, but it's been a war of attrition, and they're not enforcing the law. So even though we've been able to keep it in place in many instances, EPA is just not enforcing the law. So all of our environmental protections have been at risk, continue to be at risk.
It's remarkable to me, Brian, along with, and you've been certainly one of the leaders in the nation also, in trying to highlight this whole issue of the emoluments clause. Maybe again, educating us, educating our listeners, explain to folks what the emoluments clause is and why we should give a darn about it.
So there are actually two emoluments clauses. The foreign emoluments clause says that no federal official can take any present or any emolument of any kind whatever from a foreign state. No gifts, no nothing from a foreign state.
Not even Russia.
As much as Donald Trump likes to think of it as part of the United States, not even Russia.
Not even Russia.
And the Domestic Emoluments Clause says that the president cannot receive any emolument from the United States or any of them, and meaning any state. Trump violates both of those clauses every day. He's got the Trump Post Office Hotel in Washington, D.C. that he has by virtue of a lease from the federal government. And that is itself an emolument, but through that, he gets payments from foreign states. They're essentially laundering money, giving it to the president of the United States through the Trump Post Office Hotel. And we've sued him to stop him from receiving these emoluments. By the way, most recently, this week, Donald Trump, the hotel owner, has asked Donald Trump, the president, to give him a break on his lease. He's literally asked the General Services Administration to reduce his lease payments for the Trump Post Office Hotel.
Well, clearly, if you were his attorney general, this would not be going on. But, and I know we're getting to the end of our time, and we really appreciate you spending. I hope you come back at some point. I hope we can actually elbow bump or get 5.5 feet apart when we get together the next time without a mask. Right. But do you think he's ever going to go to jail? I mean, I sit here and I watch all of this, let alone the allegations from women and the way he speaks to people and telling Wei Zhejiang to quiet. I mean, it is. Don and I sit here on a daily basis now, and I'm not really, I don't want to watch these rallies every night, but I am concerned for all of us, and I need a good, healthy anger, about the net. We should all be a little upset about all of this, but is he ever going to go to jail? I mean, as the lead attorney in our state, seeing all of these things that you believe you could prosecute, sue, whatever, I wonder if he's really going to walk from all of this when it's all done.
Mr. My fondest hope is that he's out of office this November. I'll settle for that. I don't really care what happens to him after that. He's very dangerous as the president of the United States. And what I wish for him personally, I wouldn't want to say in public. But
well, he may be very dangerous as a citizen the next day, too. That's what concerns
me. That's true. That's true. But much less dangerous than he is as president. And literally, I mean, he's responsible, I think, for a lot of illness and death as a result of the coronavirus. His willful refusal to address this extreme healthcare crisis, pandemic, whatever you want to call it, has caused suffering and death all over the United States, and he's a terrible president. He doesn't know how to run government, and he can't control himself. He's greedy. He looks at it as an opportunity to make money, to advance his own financial interests, and aggrandize himself personally. And that's just extremely dangerous when he's the leader of our country.
It's a remarkably dark time in the history of the United States. Nestor, you said it. We're going to have the Attorney General back on, hopefully in person. We've just scratched the surface for so many issues in the states. But, Brian, I can't let you run. It's not like you've heard this question for the first time, but in 2022, there will be another election in the state of Maryland. There will be an open gubernatorial seat, and everywhere I go among Democrats, they almost always wistfully say, Brian Frey, boy, would he be a great governor.
Man, we are hard news today. You're going right after him, aren't you?
You've heard that once or twice. What do I say to my Democratic friends who say that, Brian?
Well, right now, Don, my sole focus electorally is to get Donald Trump out of the White House. That's all I'm working for this year. That's all I'm thinking about. After we accomplish that, I'll worry about my own political future.
Fair enough.
I love the way
enough.
You think. That's good.
Nestor, take us out of here. It's been an incredible 45 minutes. Brian, I can't thank you enough, and hopefully we'll have you back. So, Nestor, take us out of here.
Yeah, big appreciation. Attorney General Brian Frost joining us here, belated but on time. And we talked about some things we wouldn't have talked about a couple of months ago. So, big appreciation. We meant to do it at State Fair with chicken and waffles and raspberry sauce and Don with French press coffee and all that good stuff. But we'll get back over there soon. Give a shout-out to Evan and the folks over in the 21228 and let them know what kind of tacos you want on the menu across the street when we open up this summer. Also, our friends at Fadley's, you can curbside, you can get some crab cakes. I'm on essential crab cake business downtown at some point. I hope to get that done. And, of course, our friends at Moeller & Gary Realty. And I would encourage you to go listen in the buyatoyota.com audio vault to Don's son, Jeff, and I have some fun and talk about old life and current life and real estate and pandemics and chasing his kids around the house in the Moeller Sportatorium of the 21228. Nasty at WNST.net finds me. We're mixing and mingling all sorts of stuff. Cal Ripken joined us last week. Brian Frost with us. We're still doing arts. Next week, we're moving to university presidents and leaders. Looking forward to reuniting with Freeman Hrabowski, amongst others. And we'll also have all of the mayor candidates in 2 weeks joining us before the election. And if you are voting in the 7th, make sure you get those envelopes out. My wife and I did that earlier in the week as well. I am Nestor. He is Don. Thanks to Brian Frosch, our Attorney General. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and watching a little football draft this weekend as well. We're keeping calm, we're staying local, and we're always Baltimore positive.